If your small business has a problem, you could say,
"Ugh, just my luck."
But you should say,
"Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there."
And we'll help get you back in business. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Psoriatic arthritis symptoms can be unpredictable.
I had joint pain, and I couldn't move like I used to.
I needed relief.
I got Cosentyx.
It helped me move better.
Cosentyx secukinumab is prescribed for people 2 years of age and older with active psoriatic arthritis. Don't use if you're allergic to Cosentyx. Before starting, get checked for tuberculosis. An increased risk of infections and lowered ability to fight them may occur, like tuberculosis or other serious bacterial, fungal, or viral infections. Some are fatal. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms like fevers, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough, had a vaccine or plan to, or if inflammatory bowel disease symptoms develop or worsen. Serious allergic reactions and severe eczema-like skin reactions may occur. Learn more at 1-844-COSENTYX or Cosentyx.com.
Ask your rheumatologist about Cosentyx.
Down to business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland
on News Talk.
Now, I told you about our esteemed business panel. They're here. Susan Hayes Cullerton is with us, aka the positive economist. Also looking quite dapper, can I say, is the one and only Doug Keating, who doesn't normally come to review the business stories in a tin of fruit. You're welcome, Doug.
Thanks, Bobby. Yeah, I'm dressed up a bit today because I'm rushing out of the studio after this to go to the Dublin International Film Festival, where I'll be proudly presenting the inaugural Avalon World Cinema Award. So some great movies from all over the world, and Brad Pitt wasn't available, and they said I'd make a good substitute.
Well done, Doug. Well, good luck with that, and thanks for joining us this morning. Susan, it's been a bizarre 24 hours in the States. We witnessed 50 minutes of the most bizarre TV that I've seen in a long time. It's all over the papers today, but can I bring it to page 4 of the today's Irish Independent, where Senan Maloney and Amy Blaney are saying that maybe we need to rethink, a major rethink of the Taoiseach's US visit after the Trump's clash with Zelensky, which was really, really jaw-dropping.
Well, I was watching the exchange in the Oval Office last night, and then, of course, a couple of minutes later, we saw Micheál Martin on the Late Late Show. So it was really jarring, actually, to see what was going on in both conversations.
He seemed quite shocked by it.
He did, and also, I mean, Micheál Martin has had a few attempts now at getting into the White House, and I'd say he's really wondering, how do I handle this? Because the main focus of this piece that's here today is just about how the European leaders have doubled down on saying we're going to stand behind Ukraine. Obviously, Micheál Martin has a lot to talk to President Trump about as regards Irish business, Irish trade and diplomacy in general. So I'd say he's really trying to figure out, like, how exactly do I play this? What struck me about the exchange, though, between Trump and Zelensky is the constant focus that Trump has on holding the cards. And even there this
the
morning...
The mention of cards.
The mention of them in the first place.
Yeah.
But, you know, who holds the cards? And this morning, as we were literally coming into studio, the breaking news now is that, you know, Trump is saying that he overplayed his hand. Is that Trump is treating this like a business negotiation, and this is a war. Like, this is a war. But what you mentioned about it's been a bizarre 24 hours. I think if you look at what's gone on over the past 6 weeks, Bobby, since the inauguration, we've seen an entire pivot of where the US is really aligning its resources, its value proposition, and who it's really standing beside. I mean, you know, obviously we had Biden, who was right behind Ukraine and challenging Russia. But I'd say Putin was just delighted with what he was looking at last night. And then if you look at the second story today from Patrick Bishop, the key concern here from a European perspective is, now can Putin say, well, if I've got the US behind me, where can I go next into Europe?
Yeah. Doug, can we start with the 50 minutes yesterday? Do you think that was a setup, or was it something that just exploded on air? I thought it might have been a setup, but I don't know.
It's very hard to tell. I mean, what is strange is normally those moments in front of the cameras are sort of exchange of banalities and pleasantries. And then, you know, behind closed doors is where you do the tough talking. Now, one theory is that the way J.D. Vance was doing a lot of the talking, and Trump sort of was just happy to kind of nod him along, made some people think that maybe it was a setup. I don't know. It was, as Suzanne says, and as the reporting says, extraordinary. What jumped out for me of the many things Trump said, certainly the cards language, but also a phrase where he said, you know, I'm in the middle. I am for both Ukraine and Russia. And I think that was, that's kind of the crux of it in a way. You know, Suzanne says it's like a, it's a business deal. But in that phrase, he's kind of giving a moral equivalence between the Ukraine and Russia, which obviously European leaders and many, many people down the road, the world don't agree with. I was reassured by the robustness of the comments from all over Europe. But as the Patrick Bishop piece in the Daily Mail that we're looking at says, the historian there, Patrick Bishop, says, makes the point, without Patriot missiles, Ukraine's cities will be naked and defenseless against Russian missile and drone attacks. So this is real. This is existential for President Zelensky. Looking at it from Donald Trump's point of view, Larry Donnelly, the NUI Galway legal professor, I've robbed his insight, which is, you know, we think about these things and we're very kind of Eurocentric and maybe we're appalled and we think it's wrong. But for Trump, like, does he care about that? You know, he's probably thinking about his MAGA base. And for his MAGA base, I suspect this was red meat and great TV. But what Larry also says is, but what, how does it play with MAGA light? So the people who kind of back Trump, but they slightly hold their nose, will they wear with this? And he says, and I kind of agree with him, I think they will. I think this plays okay for Trump politically. How it plays out across Europe and for all of us is obviously another matter.
We look at the economic and indeed sort of business, potential business fallout of it in a second. But Susan, in terms of Europe, and you say the last 6 weeks, Europe has really been blindsided by all this, hasn't it? Completely.
I think much of the world has. I mean, obviously, when we're looking at the imposition of the tariffs that's going to be happening next week in Canada and Mexico, I think there was a sense of when Trump comes in, look, it'll probably be different than the first time. But when you look at the sheer number of changes and the ferocity of them, what I'm struck by is the short focus, the short-sightedness of a lot of them. And particularly when it comes to the tariffs, I think the actions that are being taken from the US, I don't think that they have an awful lot of long-term sustainability there. I mean, when you look at, say, a trade war that is being created, when we look at, say, relations with China, when we look at the very big divisions now between Europe and the US, I mean, the US is playing a very much, of course, a nationalistic card, but it's getting ever more lonely in the world order. And I don't think that plays out well for the US at all.
Well, let's just stay with some of the, I suppose, potential fallout. Cliff Taylor's piece in today's Irish Times, the headline is, "What if Trump is not bluffing about big tariffs?" And you know, the big thing here is that there's a budget about to be approved in the US where, you know, Trump is going to have to make a call about what his intentions actually are. And as Cliff Taylor says, you know, what if he's not bluffing? And it appears through this article that he potentially isn't.
I don't think he is. I don't think he's bluffing. But the way Cliff Taylor approaches this is that he looks at, what are tariffs being used to do? Are they simply being used as a revenue raising measure as exports are being sold, or sorry, as imports are being brought in into the US, and therefore it's generating revenue?
Or are they being used as cash for the US to help pay for tax cuts elsewhere?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that holds an awful lot of water. You'd need an awful lot of tariffs to go anywhere towards the income tax that is raised between the general population. But he also talks about, can you get negotiations on the fact, for example, in defence spending in Europe, etc. Now, one thing that I would bring to this conversation is, I hear obviously in Ireland we're talking about, how does this affect us? Let's go to the root of this. How does this affect American business? Because if you think about this, last year half of all US imports were either business supplies or capital goods. So the reality is that tariffs are really hurting US businesses. And I had a conversation this week with our biggest client in the US, and I was talking to them about tariffs. And the fact of the matter is, this is going to drive up their cost base. And the other thing, of course, and I know we'll talk about it, but is, we can also see a strengthening in the US dollar. So if I think we need to think about this from actually more first principles, which is that if the cost base of American business goes up and they buy as much as they do from us, well, then that's really going to hurt. It's going to hurt. It's going to hurt them. And in addition as well, I think something that has gone a little bit under the radar here is that is that the European stock market has done a lot better since Trump's inauguration versus the US one. The Euro stocks, the 600 stocks, is up 9.11%. The S&P is only up 1.46%. So the reality here is that I think when it comes to where US businesses are coming from, is they're going to be hurt a lot by this. And then that has a knock-on effect. And so when it comes to Trump negotiating with the rest of the world, that's one thing. When he's negotiating with his own people, this is what I'm saying about the short-sightedness, is that I think it's a blunt instrument. It'll hurt him.
Yeah. Does he? He doesn't seem to mind. Doug, what do you think?
Well, I mean, I think it is still quite uncertain what he will do. I mean, businesses are all around the world are looking at this, and no one's quite clear, you know, whether he will go ahead to the extent that he's talked about. I think Susan's right, though, that it is, I think, noticeable that it's starting to unnerve markets. Just this week, we saw the S&P 500, I think, down 4 days out of five. Now, nothing huge, but we have seen a massive, massive rise in US stocks over the last few months. And I just wonder if the air might start to come out of that and if the noise around tariffs is all part of that. So look, we'll see. I mean, Cliff ends his piece saying, either way, chaos is coming. The only question is what shape it takes. I think that's probably about as
we'll park
strong
on
a
there.
Conclusion as we can reach.
Let's look at the piece in the Mail, Susan. Matt Cooper really telling us about with tourist numbers tumbling, we need that Yankee dollar. Now, a couple of things in this article, just 1.24 million USA, 2.4 from the UK. So there's huge numbers here at play. The 36% of the 6 billion in tourism comes from the US and Canada. And Americans spend three times more than English or Europe or people from Great Britain. So if we put all that into the mix, the Irish Hotels Federation are forecasting a 2% dip in overseas tourism for this year, 25, that equates to 100 million euro.
Mm. Yeah, the numbers here are really, really significant. I mean, you talked about the number, the millions of people that are coming from both sides of us, both waters. I saw here that your North American visitor spends 1,526 euros on average versus a British visitor who spends 509 euros. Now, I think obviously we need to take into consideration here, somebody from Britain can just pop across for a day or
it's
two.
It's probably
or a
about a length of stay, and there's other things like that in there as well.
It would be. So I think here is actually where our previous two conversations, well, the second conversation we've had today, here's where the strong dollar helps us out. Because now for people who are coming from Northern America, coming over to us, or from Canada, particularly North America. Yes, they're currently looking at parity. So our costs, of course, have been driven up by inflation and all of the other things that we've spoken about in this show over the years. So the strong dollar here is helping us. If you decide, though, Bobby, to bring your grandkids over to Disney, you'll feel it in your pocket now, of course, over to Orlando.
Don't go there.
You could be sailing over there yourself to cut costs. But the point is that this certainly does help us. And one thing that I think the hospitality sector, it's had such a hard time between COVID, rising costs, inflation, then of course the decrease in the availability of labour, etc. And one thing here that's the point that's made is, and I completely agree with it, is bringing the NFL game to Ireland.
Investment of 10 million. I think that's money well spent.
Absolutely. I think it's very, very well spent. I was at the Notre Dame game a couple of years ago. It's brilliant. The 50,000 visitors that come over for that. And of course, going back to the point I was making there about the increase in the spend, or the difference in the spend, is a lot of people who come over for the game, they'll be here for around about a week or more. They'll be golfing all over the place, eating all over the place. And I think it's very welcome. And I also think, and another point that's well made here that I agree with, is that it also puts Ireland on the radar of people who are behind American football. And as we're seeing a rise in more nationalism in the US, I think anything that can make a connection with the US in a positive way. Yeah. Go for it.
Doug, can I bring you to matters aviation? I know that's one of your favourite topics. So let's talk about the Aer Lingus numbers. First of all, operating profits dropping by 20 million amid the 2024 disruption. So not a great set of results, but the parent company operating profits of 4.4 billion for last year. That's IAG Group. They're serious numbers.
Yeah, no, that they are. And IAG's shares were up, I think, nearly 5% on the back of those results. So at a group level, doing very well. I think when you unpick the Aer Lingus results a bit more, I'd be less concerned. I mean, operating profit of 205 million, down 9%. And the two reasons they give for that are the industrial action and also some increased capacity from an unnamed transatlantic competitor. But the winds, I still think, are pretty positive for Aer Lingus in terms of travel demand. They've, as the story says, six new Airbus A320 XLRs that will help them increase their transatlantic capacity in 2025. And the underlying backdrop for the industry is good, which I think is what fed into the IAG group results with profit ahead of expectations. The Cantillon piece at the bottom perhaps does raise an issue that is of concern, not just for Aer Lingus, but for Ryanair and all the airlines, which is not just the passenger cap, which I think we've spoken about before, and we're aware of that, and that's, I think, been delayed and may be resolved. This is a separate issue around night flights, where an appeal by local residents to onboard Planola has led in a decision that the number of flights allowed between 11 p.m. and 7 a.m. in the morning to be reduced from 100 to 35 on average a day, which is pretty striking.
And you also talked about the U.S. Traffic. That's when those planes
Yes,
land.
And Lynn Embleton, Aer Lingus' CEO, she describes it as absolute madness. But also she speaks to the issue around the point you make that actually those early morning flights coming in from the US are then connectivity into Europe. People are trying to, you know, those flights coming in 5, 6 in the morning, you can get on another plane, you can be in Paris, you can be in Rome, you can be in Berlin. Yeah. And that's big business for Aer Lingus. So look, obviously have sympathy for residents and the noise and the issues, but it does seem to me an absolutely dramatic drop, and I am sure Aer Lingus will be vigorously trying to see what can be done, along with, I'm sure, Ryanair as well.
Let's move to Glanbia, a great piece from Joe Brennan in today's Irish Times, Susan. Glanbia facing a struggle to convince investors it can get back on track. Basically, the shares dropped 23%. It's all around this higher whey prices in their nutritional division, which this piece tells us is going to cost them somewhere around 200 million.
So Joe Brennan gets to the real heart of the issue here when he says that high whey prices would weigh in on margins in the biggest division, performance nutrition, where Optimum Nutrition accounts for 2/3 of sales. Now, both of those are very weighty, if you'll excuse the pun. But the point here is that Glanbia have been blindsided, we're using that word again, just by the increase in the price of whey. And then that has led to, as Joe Brennan points out there, a big decrease in margin. So therefore, investors are now questioning, okay, number one, can Glanbia really get good foresight on price projections? Because if that's a question, then of course that could lead to other issues. And then the other thing is that this piece highlights how two big brands have been bought, SlimFast and Body and Fit, and been basically retired because they haven't been able to deliver on what they had planned. So again, this is kind of the second impact here. On number one, can Glanbia understand and price and understand and navigate pricing increases, but secondly, to attract deals. And what I think here was striking is just how they Glanbia themselves are saying, look, we are going to be reducing our earnings estimates in the coming quarters. Now, that's the one thing investors don't want to hear at all. So if I was to look at this from another perspective, though, Bobby, that's a lot of bad news. That's a lot of bad news being factored in there. And I just checked before we came in, like, the dividend yield of Glanbia is at 3.8%. The PE ratio now is low double digits. It could actually be a good and interesting prospective purchase here.
Well, I think in their defence, it's pointed out that they have a very strong balance sheet, allowing it to buy back 102 million of shares last year, and the board to sign off a further 148 million. Of stock purchases going forward.
Yes, so I think that shows that the company has resilience, but I think what investors are wondering is, are they using that resilience wisely as a result of these two points? But what I would be saying today is that that's a lot of bad news that is factored in. And if somebody was a defensive investor, that is an interesting stock to look at today.
Doug, I don't know if you're a player in the Bitcoin market, but we talked about the markets. One that was the first to react to all that's going on in the world was Bitcoin. down 25% from all-time high as crypto rout worsens overall. What are your thoughts?
Well, I'll declare myself as a Bitcoin and crypto skeptic, and if you do have some money to invest, I'd be much closer to recommending following Susan into Glanbia shares than Bitcoin. But to try to talk about Bitcoin credibly, I will run through where we're at. Obviously, Bitcoin had a massive rally, particularly off the back of Trump. On the inauguration, I think Bitcoin hit an all-time high of $109,000 per coin.
That was the day Trump's inauguration.
Yeah, in January. It's now down about 25%, traded down to about $78,000 a coin this week. And I mean, Bitcoin is in a way the ultimate kind of risk punter's asset. And I think, as we were talking about a bit earlier, I think people are feeling a little bit more risk averse, the tariffs, the uncertainty, yeah, all that noise. And I think that's what you're seeing reflected in the come down in Bitcoin. And I read another article this week that the total value of all crypto assets was something around $3.5 trillion until the recent declines. $1 trillion worth has gone up in smoke. So look, everyone's invest in what you want, but yeah, I would be very careful, folks.
So is this one of the early warning places, if this is the canary
in the coal mine,
as Doug called it, the punter's place? When we see, is this likely to lead to other things in more, I suppose, traditional markets?
Well, here's where I'm going back to the point about, I think there's a short-sightedness in some of the decisions that we're seeing coming out of the US at the moment. And if there's anywhere that can react really, really quickly, it's the markets, and Bitcoin is one of them. Like, I would agree with, I share Doug's skepticism around this. I don't invest in Bitcoin. I don't like the asset class in virtue of the fact that there aren't actual real earnings or anything really driving it. But I find that what people really like about Bitcoin is its volatility, but it's not on the way down they like it. It's on the way up. This, to me, is indeed, it's an example of where it goes back to the correlation I was making between the S&P 500 and the Euro Stoxx 600. There's a real worry out there about where risk can go. But I will also say, to pick up on a point that Doug made earlier about the where the S&P 500 is at the moment, if you look at the concentration of the Magnificent Seven, those really big tech companies, investors have gotten so used to hearing massively big numbers coming out of them and outperforming all the time. I think we're seeing a perfect storm with the financial markets at the moment,
yeah,
between these tech companies not being delivering as highly as they were, worries around global economics, and then the third thing is, of course, sentiment in general.
Doug, just we see in the Irish Examiner, and it's a kind of a Cork-focused story, but I thought it was a good one maybe to discuss at a wider level. London's first nights are offering advice to city enterprises, because we do know that all our cities particularly have struggled since COVID about re-energising, and the night economy is hugely important. And I think this is a good proactive way to at least get some initiative going.
Yeah, this is an event that they're running in Cork next week. It's called Enterprise After Dark. And Amy Lamay is the guest speaker, and she was the so-called night czar in London and seemed to be very impactful. They focused on three geographical regions in London and introduced three areas: infrastructure improvements, community engagement, and improving safety. And in, you know, one of the areas, the night spend went up 70%. So, look, I think it's a very sensible conversation for Cork to be having. There have been issues around the quality of our city infrastructure. You know, there's been quite high profile, issues around safety and certainly in Dublin inner city. So, look, there's this conversation to see whether some of the magic that Amy Lamay brought to London could perhaps work in Cork. And those ideas, I'm sure, could be applied in all our cities.
Everything can work in Cork, Bobby, of course.
Yep. Susan, I know it's a Cork-based story, so we better get your thoughts on it.
Yeah. So, well, I think, you know, Doug has really spoken here about the specific initiatives here. And there's another piece that's in this article that I'd like to pick up on, and that is a clarion call to every business owner this week. It is Local Enterprise Week, Local Enterprise Week. And there are events right across the country. And what this piece does, it does a great job of highlighting everything that's happening in Cork. And I really would encourage people, having worked with so many of the local enterprise offices, in recent times. They put a huge amount of effort into organising events this week.
There's a lot of stuff there, particularly for small business.
There really, really is. And it's around efficiency and lean and scaling up and so on. So definitely look at Local Enterprise Week this week.
Finally, Doug, my doppelganger, Hugh Wallace.
Gosh, there is, yeah.
There is, actually, my God.
A taxi driver last
week dressed, actually, Bob.
Told me that I was doing a great job renovating them houses. So I said, well, thank you very much. So there you go. But he's in the paper for some good news for him in that he seems to have got at least a large portion of his retention planning for his place in Portobello through.
Yes, so Home of the Year presenter Hugh Wallace and well-known architect has been doing a job on a house he bought in Portobello for, I think, €300,000 in 2020. Part of that included raising the roof height, and it looks like he went about 30 centimetres over what he had planning for. So that was put him in a bit of an issue with Dublin City Council. Thankfully, after discussions and mature reflection, they have reached amicable agreement. Retention planning permission has been granted, although Mr. Wallace has also given, I think, just over €2,000 as a contribution to public infrastructure in the area. So hopefully everyone's happy.
Keep on building, Hugh. That's what I say. Last quick word to you, Susan.
I mean, look, it really just sounds like he made decisions about the house that seemed very, very small. They were agreed afterwards. And as Doug says, he's now made the money towards it. I think actually the picture that they put in the paper wasn't the most aesthetically pleasing of the house. That's the thing I'd be annoyed about if I was your doppelganger this morning.
Not as short in his glasses then. That's good. Okay, big thanks to my guests, Susan Hayes-Culleton and Doug Keating. Doug, good luck with your event. Susan, great to see you again.
Down to Business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland.
Saturday morning at 11 on News Talk.
Psoriatic arthritis symptoms can be unpredictable.
I had joint pain and I couldn't move like I used to.
I needed relief.
I got Cosentyx.
It helped me move better.
Cosentyx secukinumab is prescribed for people 2 years of age and older with active psoriatic arthritis. Don't use if you're allergic to Cosentyx. Before starting, get checked for tuberculosis. An increased risk of infections and lowered ability to fight them may occur, like tuberculosis or other serious bacterial, fungal, or viral infections. Some are fatal. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms like fevers, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough, had a vaccine or plan to, or if inflammatory bowel disease symptoms develop or worsen. Serious allergic reactions and severe eczema-like skin reactions may occur. Learn more at 1-844-COSENTYX or Cosentyx.com.
Ask your rheumatologist about Cosentyx.